Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast. It's Bill and Alan.
Oh, am I supposed to talk now?
You were supposed to talk now. And we're short a person today. We were waiting for Alan. We were waiting for Dennis to give his part, but he's traveling today, so he didn't make it. But we are just getting the show started today. We got a great guest. He's a four-time guest on our show. Actually, the only four-time guest we've ever had on the show, right?
That's correct.
That would be that'd be Mitch LaFon from Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. That's hard to say. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon.
Doesn't anyway, roll off the tongue like his old show.
It doesn't. But, you know, he's on Westwood One, and he's getting, like, killer guests, and I don't know. He just bragged the shit out of it for an hour.
You'll get to hear it in a few minutes.
That's right. Yep. Hey, you got any news for today?
The only news that I have is not really news. It's me bitching.
Oh, again? 2 weeks in a row?
Well, this time it's bitching about people in general. You know, I bought the ticket for the Hairball show at the Victory over this past weekend. What of the show I got to see was great.
Uh-oh.
Sons of bitches can't stay in their seats and watch a whole show.
What's the problem? Just peeing all the time or beer?
They got to get up and get beer and get up and pee and get up and get beer and get up. There is not one song that I saw from beginning to end without somebody walking in front of me. The whole show was that way. The whole damn night. And it's not like there's not four or five people walking around with the beer and the soda and the water selling it to you, so you don't even have to go anywhere.
Oh, wow.
You know, I tried not to be a grumpy old man, but as the night went on, woo.
Got a little bitchy, did you?
You know, I kept my grumpiness to myself, though.
All right, that's
till
good.
Now,
that's
I good. Saved it up.
All right. So how was Hairball? I've seen the videos, but how were they?
Hairball was pretty good. They're similar to Hairbangers Ball and some of those other 80s bands, except when the show starts, they do two Kiss songs, and they have a guy dressed up in jeans makeup that comes out and does Deuce and Rock and Roll All Night. Then he walks off stage, and their stage kind of looks like the Love Gun stage.
Oh.
So as he's going off stage, here comes a Dee Snider lookalike. They do a couple of Twisted Sister songs. And then as he goes off stage, here comes the next lookalike. And then they do two or three songs. You know, they had a Poison, a John Bon Jovi, an AC/DC, Prince, a David Lee Roth lookalike, Ozzy. They close the night with an Alice Cooper lookalike, which that dude sounded dead on Alice Cooper. He looked the part. He was a little chunkier than Alice is, but he looked the part, and he sounded the part. Overall, the performance was good. My friend Chuck, his band 8-Ball, opened the show.
Oh, and, man. Yeah. I want to see them play sometime.
Yeah, well, we need
I to like get, Chuck. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, we need to get those guys on the show.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
You can get that hooked up, man.
I can make that happen.
I can make that happen.
But,
cool.
Yeah, the funny thing was, and I had to text a couple of friends. I think I texted you when the guy come out to do the John Bon Jovi stuff, and I said, "Living on a Prayer is being performed by John Bon Doughboy."
Oh yeah, he did.
Because that dude was a little portly,
little chubby.
Yeah, that would be like me getting up there without the hair.
Yeah, there you go.
That's all I have. It's been a pretty quiet week. I've been kind of I'm the IT guy where I work, and I'm doing a massive server migration and rebuilding.
Oh yeah,
taking old and making it new, and getting rid of old, and you know it's so I don't have a lot of spare time this last few weeks.
I understand that. I've been traveling a little bit, so I've been out. I did buy some vinyl this week. I bought a 38 Special Rock and Roll Strategy, which is kind of a you know, a later version of 38 Special with a lead singer. I like that album, though. It's a really good album. Got a couple good songs on it. I bought the first Whitford St. Holmes album. And I'm like, okay, this is what I did. I put it on while I had something running on the TV because I have my stereo in the living room. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, damn, that is a great song. I got to look that up. So I'm on my I'm on my phone looking it up, trying to figure out what the name of the song is while I'm listening to it, because I thought it was on the television.
It was on
your
record.
Didn't realize it was the record was playing. Then I was like, hey, you're an idiot.
That's funny.
Oh, well, but that's a great record. I mean, and I got a really good deal on it, so I definitely picked that up. And then, I got Saga, Worlds Apart. It's got a song on it called, Tonight You're on the Loose.
That's the only Saga song I know.
That's the only Saga song I know, too. And it was like, it was $2.25. And it was, it's a great, I mean, I like that song. I really do. So it was worth it because I listened to it and it's pretty good. So that's really been it for me, too. So we don't have much because Mitch took up the whole hour and about a half another hour when we got off, which was awesome. That was great having him on the show. And he's always a good guest and he gives us some great feedback and gives us some good information. So, you know, tonight you're going to hear a little about, I didn't tell you everybody, today is episode number 112. I think I missed that at the beginning. And this is going to be March 15th, which is the Ides of Mitch. Right?
Yes.
March. I don't know. Anyway, he's going to talk a little bit tonight about, you know, how he does some of his stuff on the show and some great guests he's getting on the show. And then we spend some time talking about Kiss and a little love-hate thing and all that kind of good stuff because it's always fun to do that with Mitch. He's a
but
little
we're not talking about the song You Love Me to Hate You.
No. Not talking about that. So, all right. Here you go. Hang on, people. This is quite a ride.
Go.
Hey, welcome to the show. And our guest tonight. All right.
Told you.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the show. And our guest tonight is Mitch LaFon from Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon on Westwood One Radio Network, right?
Correct. The Westwood One. Yes. We have gone a long way from three sides of the coin. We out of the basement to the penthouse.
There you go. So what has that done for you? Does that give you more access to people?
Yeah, it's made life incredibly simple. I mean, I wrote Bon Jovi's publicist last year and I said, hey, how about an interview? And I think they sent back a crying face emoji. And this year they... this year they said, we're going to check on availabilities. Would you be willing to talk to David or Phil or one of the other guys? And I went, listen, if it's in Bon Jovi, I'll take who. And that's made a difference. And the musical guests are different. I mean, I've just interviewed Moby. I've just interviewed the guys from UB40. I've had Mick Jones of Foreigner. What was his name from Simple Minds? I'm losing his name. The singer of Simple Minds.
Is his name Mick?
I know who you're talking. I know what you're talking about. I can't think of his name though.
Yeah, and so it's interesting because before I was just the metal guy, and it was just, you know, do you want to interview the band that sounds like bah? And you go, okay, that's what I got to do. But, you know, like you guys, I'm older, and so I grew up on The Breakfast Club and Red Red Wine, and along with the Kiss songs, along with the Cheap Trick songs, along with the Metallica songs. And you know, today alone, I did three interviews. I had Judas Priest on at 10 o'clock. I had Fleming Rasmussen, the guy who did all the Metallica albums, on right after. And then, in fact, I was supposed to have John Corabi, but that didn't happen. But still, that's what happens. Now it's 3-4 interviews per day. I mean, I've got shows in the can. Now we're talking in early March. These shows, I could do two guests an episode of pre-records right now that will last me through May, which is sort of why I started putting stuff on the YouTube channel, just because it's like... I've got too much. And next week, people want me to do another bunch of interviews. And I'm actually thinking I'm going to take a couple of weeks off just to try to clear out the backlog. But, you know, my next show is going to have Stryper, It's going to have Judas Priest. It's going to have Nazareth.
Wow. That's
cool.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Right? And then I'm going to come back the week after with Mick Jones, UB40, and Alan Niven of Guns N' Roses. So it's, yeah. I guess that was the short answer to your question. It's changed everything. It really opens doors. And when you say Westwood One, especially to an older person in the industry, because they remember Westwood One from the Westwood One Presents Cheap Trick live on your radio station Friday night, they go, oh. You know, and I mean, no disrespect to Podcast One. I mean, no disrespect to what I was doing before, whether it was Brave Words or whatever. But sometimes when you would go say, hey, I'm working with Brave Words, they'd go. And a lot of times they thought Brave Words was some kind of religious magazine. They would say, oh, you write for a Christian newspaper? And it's like, well, no, not that there's anything wrong with that. But Brave Words is a metal. And they'd go, oh, well, all right. Well, you know. You don't do that with Westwood One. You go, hi, it's Westwood One. They go, right, gotcha. Who do you want and when?
Was King Biscuit on that Westwood One 2 years ago?
I believe so. I believe that.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. It was like, you know, Westwood One's King Biscuit Flower Hour or whatever it was.
Yeah. And of course, listen, you look at what they do now. It's a billion-dollar company, you know, Cumulus. They own, I think, NASCAR rights, NFL rights, all kinds of different stuff. It makes life a lot simpler. And now, you know, if I want to go to a show, I don't have to say, well, here's what's going to be and what. They just go, hey, you're Westwood One. Want to come to a show? It's like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, no, awesome. It's changed a lot of stuff. And who knows? Let's hope for bigger and better. I would love to get into television, and I'd love to do hosting of festivals like other announcers do. You know, be nice.
Cool. Exactly. You should come to Indiana and host the Indiana Expo, Indiana Kiss Expo.
Yeah, yeah, well,
that thing's packed to the rafters, dude.
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, you know, I would just need to convince the powers that be that I'm worth the introduction. But I think between the early three side stuff and now Westwood One, it's a natural fit. But
yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, it'd be such a great show. I mean, it's got Ace, it's got Eric, it's got Bruce, it's got Bob, it's got Todd Howard, it's got John Regan. I mean, do I need to go on?
No, it's got all. And they announced today that Gene Simmons' band is going to be playing on Saturday night too.
Oh, you said that in a text, and I didn't understand what you meant. So they're going to be playing also.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I looked on Brent Fitz's Facebook and. Maybe I read it wrong, but I understood that they were all going to do some kind of jam together, like everybody. And it's just like, oh, Brent, you know, like essentially you've got the guys from Union jamming with the guys from Fraley's Comet, jamming with guys that are currently in Kiss. It's like, oh, yeah, I could go for that, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like a horrible evening.
Doesn't it? Yeah, no.
Oh, I can't wait for it.
It's going to be great. And that Gene Simmons solo band, by the way, holy
crap. Oh, my God.
I'm going to go on my first Kiss rant of the night. I don't get it. Paul Stanley goes out and does a solo tour in 89, and Paul Stanley does the, what was the other one he did?
Live to Win.
And he's doing One in a Million and Magic Touch and so on and so forth. And then Gene goes out. And he's doing Charisma, and he's doing songs from the box set, and he's doing all kinds of stuff. And then they get together, and they give you Rock and Roll All Night Again. And you go, you go, what's the problem? The problem's not Tommy Thayer. I'm pretty sure Tommy Thayer can handle A Million to One or Magic Touch. But problem's not Eric Singer, because I'm pretty sure Eric Singer can handle all. And it doesn't seem to be Paul or Gene, because Gene's doing it on his shows and Paul did it on his shows. So what am I missing? Like, why can't you just go to a fucking show and play one fucking song for the diehards? Play the other 14.
Theory.
They hate me?
No, I theorize that Paul doesn't hear enough applause after they do Magic Touch or after they do Charisma or whatever because they're deeper cuts, and he translates that into that's not what people want to hear. I think it all has to do with you didn't applaud loud enough, that song's gone.
Who was applauding for Within on the Psycho Circus tour?
Oh my gosh, I was applauding that fucking song was over.
I was in the bathroom.
No, but I mean, jokes aside, you know, they did I'm an Animal on Sonic Boom. They did Within over like lead balloons. Nobody cared. I'm sure if you had pulled out Forever or Crazy Nights or Reason to Live or some of these songs that were all over MTV in the 80s, people would have gone, yeah. Even the casual fans, a casual fan would have cheered for Forever more than the diehard was going, why are they playing Within? Why? With a bass solo? Why? Right? I mean, you know, anyway, that's my Kiss rant for the night. Only because I love them.
Hey, that's not the only one.
we've had a lot of Kiss stuff going on. We were in Atlanta, and, you know, we saw... My new name for him is Punxsutawney Vinny. He was hidden away for 20 years. He comes out. He's not scared of a shadow. And now we're going to get some more music for maybe 10 years or so. But, you know, we were in Atlanta and got to see that. And it was just mind boggling. I mean, the whole weekend was kind of,
you know, surreal.
It was surreal. And it was just, and everybody there was just like, oh my God, you know, this is fucking incredible. Yeah. And then he came out that night and played a little bit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, talk to me about the much talked about Decibel Geek Three Sides of the Coin fight in the lobby. That
it wasn't. It was all on air. I mean, it was.
Yeah, there was no real fight in the lobby. No, it was.
There was. Okay. Yeah. Because I heard something about a certain host not wanting to give up a corner table spot, and then somebody else was yelling at the person about. And anyway, I heard some great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think there was
none
some,
of us. I didn't see any of that happen. I didn't even know the altercation had gone down until I heard the first Decibel Geek episode.
Okay.
I
heard there was that fight, and then I heard there was a separate yelling match about table space.
That was not with the Decibel Geek people. I think that was with some other people.
Correct.
But I don't know. I just heard, like you, I heard secondhand. Yeah. And if not knowing it myself, I don't put a lot of value in that. So I don't know for sure. But, I mean, they seemed to be polite enough. You know, it's the first time I met the guys. We were down there and we talked to him for a little bit. And,
but Vinny, come on, talk to me about Vinny.
Vinny, it was amazing. I mean, like I said, it was just great to see him out there. We were all just kind of dumbfounded as far as, you know, and his story got a little bit long-winded, but he had to explain a lot of things because of, you know, the dog story and all that stuff.
That stuff seems kind of scripted to me, though. So, I mean, it was cool to hear the stories, but it still seemed, especially when he would go back to Derek, is this how I told the story yesterday? Like he was trying to make sure he didn't contradict himself.
Right.
Same story three or four times.
Because Julian Gill, I was talking to him. He was outside. And I go, don't you want to hear this? And he goes, I just heard this shit last night. It was the same spit, you know. So it was scripted, you know. But it was interesting just to see the guy. You know, it was just because he's been, you know, the Howard Hughes of rock and roll for you know, so many years.
Now we only have to find Vito Bratta. That's the only one, that's still missing. And what's this guy from Bon Jovi, Alec John Such? But... You know, I don't
now,
mind
is,
that.
Isn't he coming to the he Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yes. Apparently. So we're
maybe he'll
two
see
out
his
of three.
Shadow.
Yeah. No, but I don't know if it was scripted or not, but if it was, it would make sense because it is a public relations space, especially with YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and all these places where videos are going to show up. And you certainly don't want it to be a complete effing disaster the first time in 20 years. No. So if it is, good for him. I mean, you know, baby steps. Let's get out there. Let's put a nice front face. And then we can worry about filling in the details in a non-whatever. But good for him. I'm happy he's back.
I think he had a positive experience. I mean, he seemed to be, and everybody was super nice, you know, to him. I mean, the whole convention itself was very... confusing. It was very unorganized. I mean, we got in there, we had a good time, but just getting into the place was almost virtually impossible. They just wasn't ready to handle that kind of that many people, and it was kind of a fiasco.
And I think that falls back to the more people you hire to work for you, the less of that money you get to keep for yourself. So Derek hired as few people to work with him as he could.
Yeah. Well, I know a festival up here in Montreal, and outside of Montreal, that does the same thing. They bring in all these great bands and they have no staff because it costs money. Oh no. But anyway.
You know, some of those people would do, I would have done that for free. If they just said we need some people to volunteer to help with, you know, whatever, I'd have volunteered to help. It'd been kind of cool to be, but you know, hey, let me meet Vinny and I'll help you.
Yeah.
That would have worked for me. You know, you wouldn't have to pay me anything. $50, you know, that'd have been a $50 autograph that they were charging. That'd have worked. I'd have done it. But
yeah, sometimes you trade off like that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I agree.
But we met some great people. We met some great people there. Man, made some friendships and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. So
yeah.
that was really interesting.
Put a Eddie Trunk video online that did really well.
Did really, really well.
Or did it? I need to get out to more of these shows. I don't go to anything. I used to go all the time when I was younger. Now I sit here and I got the dog by my feet here and I don't know. I need to get out more. I like going to a show and coming home, which is why I don't like going to the Kiss Cruise, because I wouldn't be able to come home for 4 days and that would drive me nuts. But
yeah, I really don't.
I have to get over that.
Oh man, we talked to a guy in line that about his Kiss Cruise experience. That guy, oh my God, he ended up buying a custom made chrome Gene Simmons bass, and then he felt bad about the Gene Simmons bass. And Jeff Rogers, I think, is his name, if I'm not mistaken. And then talked about, he felt bad, so he bought a Paul Stanley guitar too. And I'm like,
that cruise just cost you
holy shit, $20,000. It just cost you $20,000.
It's his $100,000 cruise.
Yeah, which is nothing. He had a great time though, but it just, I was like, wow.
Well, I've heard a couple of people. There are people obviously that can afford it, but I've heard some that have went out and got loans or they get lines of credit, and I'm like, that's not very smart. I mean, and you know, if you live in Miami, wherever, and you can just sort of go from your house to the boat and stuff, it's a $1,500 cruise. But when you're coming from Montreal, you got to spend $900 to fly down, probably the night before, because you don't want to get there in case, and then you got to pay that hotel that one. Suddenly it's a $6,000 expense, and it's nice. It's a great show. You get to see the band. And so it's $6,000. I got two kids. I'd rather buy them, you know, five bicycles each than, you know,
right.
Yep. But that's just me. I don't begrudge anybody who goes, you know, go for it, have fun.
Yeah.
I would rather spend my money differently, you know? Right.
Well, speaking of spending your money, what do you think of the Gene Simmons Vault experience?
Well, the experience itself is phenomenal. I mean, Ace Frehley shows up. Vinnie Vincent is going to show up.
I'm going to that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to Nashville. I've seen Vinnie already. I'd rather see Ace, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's okay. But I mean, you're up close and personal. He's telling you. I mean, listen, he's delivered. He's delivered.
Yeah.
He usually does. Really?
Yeah, he usually does. I mean, you can complain all you want, but he does deliver. I'm personally would rather use $2,000 on something else. I mean, I have right over here, you can't see it, but I have that Kiss big road case from, what was it, the 2009 tour with all the CDs in it. It's like, I can tap it right. That it cost me $1,500 and that was my splurge. I've splurged. That's... You know, I would love the Vault experience. I would love to hear the songs, but it's $2,000. I'm older. I've got two dogs to pay for. I've got other stuff. I've got other stuff to do with it.
Yeah, you know? I was on the fence, you know, when it first came out. My wife's like, you know, I'll buy it for you for a gift, and I just couldn't pull the trigger. And then after the first show, their first Vault experience, you know,
with Ace.
Well, and Vivian, you know, or not Vivian, God damn it. Gil.
Which one? The one in L.A.?
Julian.
Julian Gill. There we go. Well, Gene can't spell his name right, so I can't say right.
He didn't get the year right either. He put down 2008.
I know.
After seeing that, I was like, man, that's just too cool. I got to do this.
Well, you know, the funniest thing about, you know, Gene spelling Julian's name wrong and getting the year wrong is everybody on the planet was offended on behalf of Julian. And Julian was like, I had a good time. I don't care that he got that stuff wrong. You know,
and it makes it even that much more unique.
And it makes it funny, too, because of all of the people that you think that would be upset about it, he's the only one that wasn't upset about it.
Yep.
He was even joking about it on Facebook. They had a picture of it. It says, look at my 08, you know, special.
Special edition
08.
Mitch, you should just call and tell him that you're with Westwood One and see what happens.
Well, I mean, listen, I did interview Gene in October. I got a half hour with him, so.
Ah, cool.
You know, I can't complain. Listen, I've had two Gene interviews in my life, so I'm not one to bitch and moan. And yeah, when I first saw the vault thing and the prices, I thought, oh my God, what the hell is this? But people are sitting with Ace Frehley at arm's length away. People are sitting with Eric Singer arm's length away. People are going to have Vinny. Gene wins. I mean, he wins.
Yeah.
You cannot say that he didn't deliver. Had he shown up and had been an Ace Frehley cardboard cutout and take a picture with it and here's some signed napkins, maybe, but.
It's pretty amazing. It really is.
It's, yeah. Yeah. I would love to have one, and I would love to maybe have him do a vault experience 3 years down the road or something. But right now, because, you know, listen, he's not coming to Montreal right now. I would have to fly to Nashville, get a hotel. I mean, it suddenly becomes almost like a $10,000 endeavor. It's for 150 songs, you know. Calm down. It's 150 songs.
Well, it's 150 songs, and some of them are demos that are kind of partial songs, and some of them don't sound that great. So there's all kinds of.
And I know
of
you're paying for the experience, you're not paying for the songs, but.
Yeah, but you're still paying for the songs.
And I don't want to sound full of ego or anything, but I have met rock stars before. It's not something that at this point it's a thrill that I would pay for, you know. And I don't mean to sound big-headed or jaded or anything. It's like, okay, so I don't get to meet Gene Simmons this week, but next week I'm going to meet the guy in Metallica.
Well, I know. I mean, that's a valid. I mean, when you're around that all the time, it makes sense.
Right. Yeah, and I know that sounds whatever horrible to say, but I don't mean it in that horrible kind of way. It's just that it's not new anymore. It's not that thrill. It's not exclusive anymore, you know?
Right.
Is there anybody that is exclusive? I mean, that you haven't met yet or whatever.
There's plenty of people that I haven't met yet, but I mean, nobody that I wouldn't pay for.
Yeah.
No, you know, I ran into Jon Bon Jovi backstage one time. I've had Ozzy, I got to ask Ozzy a question in a press conference, and he walked by me at an Ozfest in Boston years ago. There's Paul McCartney would be cool to meet, but I wouldn't spend a penny, because what I've learned after all these years is that all these people, regardless of how special they are, or how great the music has made you feel, they're just like you and me. They talk and they go for lunch and I don't know. I know it sounds terrible.
But it makes sense. And I think we've probably noticed some of that too, the people that we've had on the show. You know, we had Rudy Sarzo on here not long ago, which was for us was a big fit. I mean, that was a big fish. We were very excited about it. But he was the coolest guy, funny, just calm. It was right around Christmas. He was showing us videos of his house with, you know, it was, but he was just a dude. It wasn't like,
yeah.
Well, the best part
was,
I can
show you videos here.
Yeah. The best part was,
I'm watching hockey.
Well, the best part when Rudy was on was he was quick to bust our balls right back. So that was,
oh yeah, he was. Yeah.
That's the thing. When you strip away the aura of it, or the your kid's eyes looking at that, everybody's just the same. And so, yeah, I wouldn't pay. I don't know. I have an objection to paying to meet a person. And especially, I think, with rock fans, I think we've lost that innocence where they should, not everyone, but when you meet them backstage, they should almost sort of thank you for coming out and giving them the career and listening to their music and being a fan. And I think we've lost some of that, unfortunately. You know, I know like Ron Young and Little Caesar, he doesn't do meet and greets. He's completely against them. And at the end of a bar show, he will stay there until every last fan who wanted a picture and wanted to shake a hand got it. And if that means 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., he'll wait. And it's a way of saying thank you. And I think we've lost a little bit of that. And I think we should probably get back to it. So, yeah, I wouldn't pay for a meet and greet. I just wouldn't. You know, I would love to shake hands with Axl Rose. I mean, I've had him walk right in front of me and not said a word. But I'm not going to pay $1,500 so that he can say hi. It seems a little silly. Love to chat with him. But, you know, anyway.
So what's your take on the end of the road? What's your thoughts on that?
My public thoughts?
No, just
your I need to have other people on my show thoughts.
Well, listen, the trademark is out there, end of the road. I think that at some point you need to start protecting copyright and start, you know, obviously if they're calling it that, if you look at Sonic Boom back in the day, about a year before Sonic Boom came out, they had copyrighted Sonic Boom. And you can go back and you can look at those requests for Kiss does that. But they've also copyrighted a whole bunch of other things. I remember when I interviewed Gene in 1980, they were talking about Kiss World. It never ended up happening. But a good businessman, as are the people in Kiss, they have to prepare and, you know, be ready and have their copyrights in place. Because the last thing you want is to book, and I'm not saying they're booking a farewell tour, but you don't want to book a 2-year farewell tour and have all these great t-shirts made, and then you find out the name doesn't belong to you, right? You look at the Vegas Golden Knights, that new hockey team, they've got the Army suing them, and it's just like, oh, what do you mean there's two Golden Knights? Whoops. Right? So, and listen, Gene and Paul and all, they're hitting 70. Yeah. You can't be doing this at 70, you know?
Mick Jagger would disagree.
Mick Jagger ain't wearing platform heels. And
exactly.
You know, Alice Cooper, and he said, Kiss could probably go on when they're 70, but it would probably have to be with acoustic guitars and sort of unplugged tours or something. You can't do the Blood, the Fire, the come on. No. I mean, you can't. So yeah, the end of the road is coming, but the end of the road is coming for Judas Priest, and the end of the road is coming for Metallica, and the end of the road is coming for Megadeth, and name any band that we loved, and the end of the road is coming. So. Yeah. I see them just being very proactive and securing copyrights for what may be the name of a tour. Because, like I said, you don't want to plan 2 years ahead and then go, oh, what do you mean Joe in Philadelphia owns that copyright? Oops. Right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
But we'll see. We'll see if Farewell Tour 2 comes. Like Ozzy is calling the No More Tours tour.
Yeah. See, he's going to be on the road till he's dead. Because
Sharon can get him in Sharon a wheelbarrow and wheel him off.
Sharon will not let him stop at all.
And I'd love to see Kiss come out with everybody. I don't think that we'll ever see 8 people standing on stage because that's just a big pain in the tuchus to organize, you know. But I would love to see them start off a show, you know, do whatever, Rock and Roll Night, Detroit Rock City, and then say, hey, in the 80s, we had these songs, and then Bruce steps out. Yeah. And Vinny, not Vinny, you know, Tommy either steps away or stays with him. And then at the end, they go, hey, you know, the national anthem of rock and roll, blah, 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 Rock and Roll All Night. And then have Ace and Peter and Bruce come out. They have to. I would hate for them to have Kistery end with just these four guys. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but you know what I mean? It would have to be a bigger celebration. I think it would be very anticlimactic if they go out on a farewell tour and the last four people standing on stage is the current band. Nothing wrong with the current band. Love the current band. But if you're going to end it and you're going to have a celebration of Kistery, you got to bring out everybody who's still breathing. You just have to. And that includes Vinny. And I wasn't a fan of Vinny's playing when he was in the band. I have nothing against Vinny out of the band. But if you're going to do it, then when the Lick It Up starts in the set, yeah, Vinny should be playing it.
Yeah. And I think you're seeing that because, you know, look at what's happened here in the last year. You know, for, you know, Gene and Ace, you know, seeing each other on occasions and did a few things. Him and Ace have been together, what, almost every weekend now. You know, Ace is losing weight. Ace is looking better than
losing weight. My gosh, he's half the man he used to be.
But he's looking good. He's got his shit together. You know, and who'd have thought that Gene and Vinny would even be in the same state, much less the same room? You know, and that's going to happen here. I'm really curious to see how that, or if it's going to be this big love fest, or I'll be there. I'll let you guys know.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put. I think easy money is that it is going to be Gene. It serves no purpose for him to be an a-hole about it. It would be very much against selling more Vault Experiences if he was.
Right.
And I think Vinny, if you look at the appearance he did recently, what's the word? I don't want to say matured because that sounds almost condescending, but you know what I mean? I think he's gotten to a place in life where he realizes that you don't show up to a Gene Vault event and become a dick. So no, I think it's going to be perfectly fun and happy and people are going to love it and fans are going to be talking about it. And you know, the Ace Frehley losing weight thing, to me, that's sort of like the biggest hint that you can find.
That, you know, and his new hair.
Yeah, the getting back into shape.
New hair.
No, but I mean, go back to 1994 and 1995. Those boys were getting back into shape, and you were like, oh, what are you getting into shape for? Well, I think we know what we get into shape for.
Right.
Long tours don't work with fat guys.
No.
Not very well. That's why I don't tour.
That's right.
That's exactly the reason why I don't tour. So
Bill,
I'm going to talk
a little. Hold on. I'm going to ask something here. No, I was going to ask you, if Metallica does their farewell tour in 10 years, you think they'll start selling their tickets tomorrow?
Yes. So I've had Mitch, I had a little rant on here on the show this week that, you know, the Metallica tour went on sale in Indianapolis. The show is on March 11th of 2019.
Correct.
Yeah. So I just had a little ballistic moment where I was trying to look at tickets and they were $135 for the cheapest tickets. And they're on sale more than a year in advance. And then Ticketmaster has a service charge. And I'm like, so those guys are just going to take all that money, set it in a nice little bank and draw some interest on it. And I was just pissed. And you know, I missed the day where you you got notice
pop up concert.
Well, or you got, you know, 6 weeks from the day of the show, you get, you know, hey, Metallica's rolling into town and you get this excitement, but now you get this excitement and you got to wait a year. And it's just,
I
like,
hope you don't die.
One of them don't die.
No, but to be fair, Metallica is not the first to do this. The last couple of U2 tours have been forever and always put on sale. Madonna did that quite a bit, and I'm trying to think.
Justin Timberlake just did it. The tickets went on sale for December.
Right, and Selena Gomez, the last time I took her for my daughter, it went 14 months ahead of time or something like that. And there was another boy band. Who was it? Anyway, they're not the first, and that's the way they do it now. And it's unfortunate because I always look at it, or even Guns N' Roses last year, the tickets went on sale before Christmas for the show in August. And I was like, that's nice, but what if I'm, you know, what if I'm dead by then? Like, what happens to these tickets?
That's why they sell ticket insurance now.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah, you can buy insurance, too. So, like, another $20 or whatever per ticket, you can buy insurance. Wow. So, your ticket just became double, you know? It's crazy.
I really don't mean to sound obnoxious, but I actually haven't bought a ticket in...
Okay, that's obnoxious. We're just gonna call it. That's obnoxious. Oh, you know, yeah, that's cool as hell, really.
it's a tad obnoxious, but it is what it is. And I've actually gotten to the point now that this is awful. But if I'm not invited, I just don't go. And you know, But listen, I'm supposed to see a show next Friday. I'm supposed to see a show. Like, I'm on the 23rd of March, I'm supposed to see Foreigner in Ottawa. I'm supposed to come back to Montreal and see Black Star Riders. And then I'm going to supposed to be in Ottawa again for Judas Priest. So, you know, I've got Michael Schenker on Monday. And it's like five shows in 10 days. So, yeah, I'm not going to pay to go to a sixth show in 10 days. And...
I think when you were on last time, you had like awful like that going on. You had like three or four shows in the same time.
Yeah, and I actually skipped a bunch of shows this week. I was invited to a bunch of stuff, and I just went, I can't. I said, I got to be home. I got to watch hockey once in a while, and I got to pet the dog once in a while. You know, I got to pretend that I'm actually married and living with two kids, you know. Boy, that sounds awful.
But you named some of those bands I really want to see. I mean, we had Damon Johnson on.
Well, you see this album that I showed you before, that's the lead singer of Blackstar. The Almighty was his band before. If you like Blackstar and you like Damon, go check out The Almighty. They stopped existing. They existed from 88 to 2003 or something. And then they did a reunion in 2008, I think. But it's that kick-ass. It's a little less rock and roll than Blackstar Riders. It's a little more sort of punky-edged. But you can hear that Damon was developing his skills. It's very much worth checking out. So
I'll be definitely checking that out then.
Yeah, that Blackstar. I mean, that is one.
Here, I'll show you this.
Trying to get them to. It'd be great for them to tour the States.
This one. Ooh. This one is called The Almighty.
See if it's on Spotify. If it is, I'll just listen.
It
to
is.
It's, okay, it's, well, I'll just listen.
Blood,
to there.
Blood, Fire, and Love, and then the other big one that they did a deluxe edition one is this one. It's called Soul Destructor, and. Both the deluxe editions are on Spotify, and I guarantee you will love what you hear on those, just those two.
I guarantee
you'll love it. Yeah. So, yes, Blackstar's great. You know, I helped them get a gig in Montreal on the 24th. That was my doing. And I love that band to death. Love that band to death.
Yeah, that was a great interview. We had a lot of fun. It was cool. That guy was, it was awesome.
Bill, what were you going to ask before I?
Oh yeah, ask me questions so I can give you more obnoxious answers.
No, okay, so you know, so
this is a public relations fiasco for me tonight.
So, I was curious about. So, how do you decide when you do the album versus albums thing on Facebook, or how do you decide? Because you put some tough shit out there, dude.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, it's not premeditated. I'm usually just sitting in front of the TV and I go, oh, yeah, that's good. Like I did that tonight. There's one coming up later on, which is two songs, two Van Halen songs. I was just sitting, oh, that would be funny. And you know, I was trained as a psychologist. I did a master's in psychology. And I purposefully don't say anything other than, you know, Kiss versus Van Halen. I never say whether it's who's your favorite band, who's the better band, who's the longest living band, who has the. And I love watching people sort of fill in the blank because there's all that missing information. And people are like, what do you mean the Master of Puppets is less good than. I go, I never said that. especially happens with people. If you go, what do you mean Eddie Van Halen is not as good? And it's like, well, I never said that. What was the one I did the other day? I did Wolf Hoffman and Scott Ian.
Yeah.
And people were bitching and moaning, and one's a rhythm guitarist and one's a... And I was like, did it ever occur to you that maybe who has... My question might have been, who has the better bald head? I mean, I never said it wasn't that. Right? So I just love the fact that people fill this stuff in, and then they attribute something to me. They go, how dare you say that Scott Ian is better? I go, but that's not what I said. I just said this or that. Well, you filled in.
Now, the comments are
my favorite was when you the day or two that you did a Kiss album and an Aerosmith album. Because every one of those for me was Kiss until you got to Toys in the Attic. And then I was like, oh!
Well, you see, and that one I did by year because I was looking, I was doing some research for some interview, and I noticed that almost every single year, with the exception of maybe Revenge and The Elder, they had both released albums in the same year, almost consistently all the way. And I was like, holy fuck, that means that in 74 we got both, and in 79 we both. It's like every year, if you're a fan of those two bands, you got product in that same year. And I was like, huh, that's kind of fascinating. And then so I wanted to see what the matchups would end up looking like. And if you looked at it, they sort of had their peak at the same time and their descent at the same time. You look at Destroyer with Rocks, and then you looked at Dynasty with Knights in the Ruts, and you go, oh, so you can see they're going up, up, and oh, they're starting to go down. And then you start looking at Permanent Vacation, and you go, oh, it was fascinating to see that both bands, when I did that, had almost sort of a similar career curve, which was bizarre. And it was just very bizarre that here are these two bands over 40 years that, with the exception of maybe four albums, released albums in the exact same space. Right? I mean, that was... And people are like, why are you matching up this one against that one? It's like, well, because they were both 1979 or they were both 1980, you know? Like Lick It Up against, not Lightning Strikes, what's that album called? Rockin' a Hard Place or whatever. And he's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, that's what came out in those years, you know? So, yeah, that's how I do it. And I purposefully leave that information blank so that people can. And I love watching those comments. I love watching
them. They're funny.
Comments are hilarious. There was one the other day with the two Van Halen albums, and the one guy goes, I only see one Van Halen album.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that one was pretty funny.
And by the way, some of the Kiss stuff, I purposefully put up Kiss against what should be clear winners because to me, that psychology of a Kiss fan is a Kiss fan is a Kiss fan. It's a diehard, and it is not a decision based on logic necessarily. Or it's based on a passion from their heart. Because when you put up Gene Simmons against Steve Harris of Iron Maiden, well, no disrespect to Gene, but I would think that technically speaking, Steve's a better player, but I would have to argue then that maybe the question was who had a more significant cultural impact. That could have been the question too. And you would have to obviously say that Gene has a more significant cultural impact because you look on a wall and you see a Kiss face. You don't see a Steve Harris face on a random poster in Yugoslavia. Right. And so it's just funny that regardless of who you put up on against a Kiss one, there's always going to be, no, it's Kiss. Nah, it's Kiss. But that's a much better than it's Kiss, right? And,
exactly.
Well, look at that Gene and Steve Harris one. That's a very good example of the blank being filled in by people because I never said it was about bass playing, right? If I had put who is more culturally significant, Steve Harris or Gene Simmons, I guarantee the answers would have flipped right around. Gene would have won that hands down, and that could have been the question. Nobody asked. They just went, oh, how dare you? Steve is so much.
It's kind of funny because when I answer that, I kind of look back. First of all, I just kind of look and decide at first. But then I start looking at the comments, and I'm like, and sometimes I flip my answer based on the comments I've read before. I'm like, well, I didn't think about it from that perspective, or I didn't think about it from that perspective. Or, that's kind of cool. The funny thing is how, like you said, how people just read stuff into it, and then somebody gets pissed off and it's like, what are you getting pissed off about? It's just an album versus album thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Why are you getting that wound up? Well, today, I think you posted something today that somebody was getting wound up about.
Why did the first Van Halen album, the first David Lee Roth Van Halen album against the first Sammy Hagar Van Halen album? And people went crazy. But again, that could have been which one has the better artwork. Yeah.
Right.
That could have been the question. Right.
Right. But there was only one Van Halen album, remember?
Right. And that was
which one only took you 32 minutes to listen to?
Right. Yeah. Right. So it's just funny. And it's just funny. I love that psychology, how when your brain doesn't have a full picture, it fills in the rest of the details to make you feel whole or comfortable. You know, could have been which album cover was green.
So basically it's for your personal amusement.
It's for my personal amusement. Yes, it is. And it's also for my mic driving me crazy tonight. No, but it's also to create a conversation, because I love the conversation. And I have to say that 99% of the time, you just see passionate fans talking to other passionate fans, which is very kind of cool. Once in a while, you'll get somebody come in and say something completely obnoxious, like I said before, you know, about tickets and stuff. No, but you'll get some one guy and just says, well, and my response to some of those is like, well, if you don't like Kiss, why are you posting on this? Just wait till the next one or just skip it, you know. But I don't censor those, because if you want to say that you didn't like Destroyer, well, then okay, right, you didn't like Destroyer. I mean, whatever. But yeah, it's a great conversation thing, and I think people like it. And I really started it by accident. I put up one day Kiss Monster versus Sonic Boom, and I think between Twitter and Facebook, I had like 800 comments, and I went, really?
Over those two albums.
Really? And I was like, huh, okay.
Was the so psychology, which one is the bigger turd?
Well, that could have been it, right?
This is this is the bread to a shit sandwich, both these albums.
I think I responded on that one and just said, why?
But it was just fascinating to see that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I thought, well, if you put two albums that are so, you know, if you put up Aerosmith Rocks against Kiss the Elder, well, there's not going to be any discussion. People are going to go, yeah, dude, Rocks, okay, and we're done. So you have to put up Rocks versus Destroyer, because then people's brain go, ooh, okay. Right. And that's why I make them tough, too, because if it's because some people, what was one guy? One guy was like, you know, put up Randy Rhoads against Eric Turner of Warrant. And it's like, well, I love Eric and I love Cherry Pie, but I mean, really, come on. Yeah. Like, why are we doing this? Right. I mean, and if Eric watches this, because there's a chance, I think he'd agree that Randy was a better player. But no, you know, so you have to make him tough so that people struggle and make it difficult. I also did, what was the other ones? Oh, I did the Iron Maiden versus Metallica discographies, because if you looked at them, they also had a sort of, if there was a Metallica album out that year, there was an Iron Maiden album out that year. And those were interesting battles, because man, Metallica fans are diehards, but Iron Maiden fans are diehards.
Right.
You know? Yep. And it makes it tough. So that's why I do it. Now, I find it fun, and I find the discussion amazing. I mean, I look just on Twitter. When I started doing it, I had 4,000 followers. Now I'm up to almost 7,500 in really a space of what, 4 months, 5 months? I mean, I started doing it around Halloween, maybe a little after. I mean, I almost doubled followers in like a 6 month period, because people just like that discussion, and it's a fun discussion. I read the comments. I don't answer everyone, because if I had to answer 100 different people, I would never get out of the house. But yeah, they're fun. But a lot of them are just spur of the moment. I'll be sitting down and a song will come on in a movie, and I'll go, oh, hey, yeah, that would be now what would go good against that? Or like I did with the Kiss one, I was just researching something for an interview, and I went, well, that is spectacular. 73, 74. So, you know,
cool.
I don't go to any kind of website of matchups, or, you know,
it's all up in the melon,
up in this space. And I ponder. I go, what would be a good matchup against that? And I also try to mix it up a little bit for European fans. Like I did Thin Lizzy versus, what was it, Uriah Heep or something? Just because you can't always just do Kiss versus something.
Yeah. Mm. So what's coming down the road in 2018? What's the word on the street? Just in general, any big records you besides the Judas Priest record and that kind of stuff?
Studio albums, I'm not so sure about. I know that in November, I can't give names and stuff, but one of the bands that I really love is going to put together a great remastered package of one of their 80s albums, which is just going to be spectacular. Culture Club. Yes.
Honeymoon Suite.
Comma Chameleon Sessions. It's going to be splendid. And then one of the biggest albums in the history of rock is supposed to have a deluxe reissue coming out in the summer, which apparently is going to cost $800 and have everything, including the kitchen sink, sold with it. And from what I'm hearing, it is going to be beyond spectacular. So there's that. There's a couple more farewell tour announcements coming down the road. One that might include, and this one is actually not Kiss before everybody says he's talking about Kiss. Mm. But there is another one from another band of that era that might include some returning members. So there's a lot to be excited by. And, you know, when I interviewed or when I spoke to Frankie Benelli the other day, he said, you know, we're sort of down to our last 5 or 10 years. We sort of are. So if you're out there and you see a band come by,
better grab it.
Yeah. don't sit around and going, oh, I'll catch the next tour, because they're really in some of these cases, there just may not be.
There are two of us sitting here right now that missed getting to see Tom Petty because they were going to catch the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to see him. And I was like, I'll get to see him sometime.
Well, I wanted to see him too, and he played the Ottawa's Blues Fest, which, no disrespect to Ottawa, I just think that festival is an incredible clusterfuck, so I try to avoid it as much as possible. And I thought, well, if he's doing Blues Fest and then he's doing Toronto, at some point he'll roll back around to Montreal, and then I think he did, but for some reason, I was like, oh, well, I'll get the next one, like you guys. And right. Same thing with Kevin Dubrow and Quiet Riot, and it's like, oh. There's no next one?
Yep.
And you know, look at Judas Priest. We've got Glenn Tipton now with the Parkinson's.
Right. Yep.
I don't know if they're going to do a farewell tour or not, but at some point, there might not be a next one. So this firepower tour that's coming up, I would go. And if they do come back, you get two good shows instead of one. Exactly. You know, where do you lose, right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
I got a question for you guys real quick. And this is a two-part deal. You know, we talk about all the time how, you know, new bands don't get a chance to get on the radio. You know, they don't play any new bands and, you know, it's hard to get things on there. There's one band that they have just been just wearing out around here. And it's that Greta Van Fleet. They have just absolutely that one Kentucky station down there. They have Madisonville. They play that every time I turn the freaking radio on. They're playing those guys. You think it's just because they sound like Zeppelin, or that? You know, I don't quite get that. I mean, to me, they're just like another. They're trying to be Zeppelin, but
yeah, you know, I think every year or every cycle we find a band that we all sort of glom to. If you look back about 10 years ago, the Strokes, everybody was talking about the Strokes, and the Strokes were all over radio, and they don't exist. And then there was Jet, and Alice Cooper was like, oh, Jet is the next greatest thing. And then there was Wolfmother, and it's
right.
I wish that Greta Van Fleet has a long, prosperous career, but right now I'm sort of smelling is that the fresh out of the oven? Is that the new right. Darlings? Is that the new Jet? Is that the new Wolf Mother? Is that the right. new The Strokes, where everybody's gaga over them? And then 5 years down the road, they go, remember this band? Like that. Do any of you remember the Jets? Or the Jets?
I remember the Jets.
I remember. You mean Jet?
Jet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great song. That's the only
song. Our band used to play that song.
But everybody told me it was the next big thing. Record companies, I was always talking about Warrant and Quiet Riot, and they were like, oh, Mitch, you're so old. Oh, this is the new wave. And it's like, huh, who's playing a gig next week? Oh, yeah, Quiet Riot. And who's not? Oh, yeah, Jet. So go fuck yourself. You know?
But the other thing I want to bring up.
The Strokes. Oh, the Strokes. They're going to be playing stadiums. Really? Really?
Yeah, I actually bought a Stroke CD for 10 cents at a garage sale, and I went back and asked for them. I bought a Strokes CD and I bought a Ramones CD, and I asked for 10 cents each, and I took them back and asked for my money back.
For both I told you to give me that.
I mean, I'm not a big Ramones fan. I thought this was going to be the one to get me on, and I just couldn't do it. It's not my thing.
But here's another thing about that Greta Van Fleet I want to bring up real quick. So I yesterday got a thing from a friend saying, hey, check out Greta Van Fleet's their Facebook page. So it was a friend of mine. So I was like, okay. So I went there and it's the Greta Van Fleet Army. Well, that's unique, isn't it? That's a new idea.
Yeah. So and by the way, I don't want to bad mouth them.
I'm not either.
But all the respect and hope that they have a prosperous 40-year career. But
yeah.
Nobody's
anyway, so I went career. To their I went to their thing, just saw the first part of their page. I mean, just went up to it, and I'm like, going, I ain't gonna do none of this. Backed out of it. So today I get my phone out and get up in the morning. I'm in the bathroom. I'm looking through this thing, and I'm like, why do I got all these Greta Van Fleet updates?
Notifications.
So I go to their page, and it's like I've joined their page, and I'm following them. And I'm like, I did no such thing. So I had to go through there and unfollow. And I'm like going, that's a scam of some sort. They've got something where if you go to that page, it instantly joins you and you start getting all these. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. That's, you know, it's
never going to happen. A lot of them do it. I mean, when you ever go to Amazon and you go search for dog food or something, all of a sudden you get dog food ads on your Instagram feed and you're going, what now? So they've been checking.
It's all about the money. It's how they get paid. It's better than some of the other websites you go to, though, Dennis. It ends up being on your phone. That's never good.
My wife's like, have you been looking at
What have you been looking at this for?
What is BDSM?
That's a new band, honey. You don't know.
Hey, Mitch, we're about at an hour, man. You said you'd give us an hour, so we want to be respectful of your time, bro.
Well, I'm still good. I got the hockey here. Let's see what period is this. Oh, it's the start of the third. Yeah, no, listen. We can do another 15 if you want. Ask me. Let's do some rapid fire questions if you've got anything. Look at me, all obnoxious, like I'm a king or something. More questions.
So what you should have did was show Gene that letter and it added the vault on there too, and said. Remember, Gene, you said if you ever made a vault, I get a free one.
You know, I had a great interview with him. Was it October? I guess it was.
I heard it. Yeah. Well, it was about the vault, wasn't it?
It was about the vault. It was fun. And the Dawkin interview I just did last week was really great too. And the Richie Faulkner one from Judas Priest, which is coming out. He told me some stuff on there, which I'm pretty sure he probably shouldn't have told me. But we'll see.
When's that one coming out?
March 12th. Monday.
So he'll be March 13th. He'll be fired up March 13th.
Well, it's interesting. I just listened to the Dawkin and Jeff Pilson interview. I thought it was very interesting. I didn't realize that Don had that much influence or whatever in Great White getting started and getting that first album and stuff like that. I had no idea.
Well, it's strange to think, but when you look back sort of at the players back then, Don Dawkin and Dana Strum were, I don't want to say puppet masters, but Dana Strum brought Randy Rhoads to Ozzy, Dana Strum, you know, Vinnie Vincent. And then you look at Don Dawkin, and he brought Michael Wagner over here. He had a little bit of help with the Scorpions. He had a little bit of hand in the pie with, of course, Dawkin, and the Rat guys were living with him or living near him. Like, he was he was one of those guys that just, you know, saw talent, understood talent, and was just always willing to lend a hand. And it's unfortunate when you see all these years later fans taking shots at him, but it's just like, you know what? All those bands that you like that aren't Dokken, I guarantee that Don probably had a little bit of something in there, where, whether it's he lent one of those guys a couch so that he wouldn't starve, or so be a little more respectful, because Don really helped a lot of folks in that 80s scene. And they sort of all did, you know. I was having a conversation with I don't want to say the name. I'll tell you later. But I was, and they were just going on and on about how Don helped get that his band up and running. And if it wasn't for Don, this band that is actually going on tour all summer probably wouldn't have existed, because Don was the peacemaker, and Don was the guy who, when they didn't have a place to stay, said, "Eh, come on the couch, let's go." So no, Don's great.
Yeah, that couch must have been busy, because, I mean, during the interview when he was talking about that stuff, and I don't mean like getting busy. I mean, there was a lot of different people rotating on that couch. I mean,
yeah,
it was amazing. And honestly, I had some thoughts about Don Dokken from things I had read and stuff like that. And that interview really changed my thought about him, because yeah, I really did think that I didn't have a great opinion of him. Not a bad opinion, but not like the greatest opinion. But after that article, I mean, after that interview, I thought, well, that's a totally different aspect. And
look at some of the albums that were produced by this guy, Michael Wagner. You look at the entire discography, he's made some of the albums you love. Michael Wagner wouldn't have been in the States if Don Dokken hadn't said, come on over, and, you know, or he would have come 3 years later, or, you know,
maybe too late.
Rat. Yeah. Rat had some help with, you know, he was part of that thing. Great White was part of that. There's a lot of stuff where people just wouldn't have happened at that, in that space and time. So, and look, when I did the Kiss tribute in 2013, I wrote a lot of folks and said, do you want to be on this? And most people are like, oh, you know, blah, 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 my public image. I don't want to be on a tribute with a whole bunch of nobodies. Don didn't even say that. He said, when you have the music, send it over. I'll put the vocal on and send it back to you. And when I got the music, he literally sent it back in 2 hours.
Wow.
Can't beat that.
Yeah.
All right, Mitch, we got to wrap it up here. We got stuff going on. So yeah, I want to thank you, man, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. It's always good to have you. And
four times even.
Four times. Now, hey, you're one time away from getting a jacket. Like on SNL, when you do the fifth time, you got to send you a jacket.
Can I get the tarp? I want the tarp.
You might get the tarp. There you go. That'd be good.
I don't know what he's hiding behind the tarp. Is it like a bar? Is it?
You don't want to know.
Is it the dungeon? Is it the dungeon? Is that one?
No, it's a bunch.
He's the one that said BSDM. Did you notice that?
It's the dildo rack back there, right?
Well, give us the Mitch pitch.
Well, listen to Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon via all the different Westwood One properties. If you want, it's on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Alexa, which is great. You can go to Amazon and say, I want to hear Mitch LaFon, and she'll say, all right, which is, you know, Apple TV, of course, will have it. And then there's the website. There's, I'm trying to think. They have it on all their different platforms. It's on TuneIn. It's on, there's too many. Anyway, just go to the...
Go outside and go, Mitch LaFon, and it'll pop up somewhere.
Right? Get on the Google.
Wonder what would happen if I did that to Siri. Hey Siri. No, but yeah, it's sort of everywhere, and you know, I thank Blabbermouth and all the different websites that pick up the articles, because we don't work together. So when they pick it up, they're really sort of doing it as a favor or because they find the content interesting. So thank you for that. And yeah, it's just, you Google the Mitch LaFon and stuff appears.
Cool.
And if I've said anything obnoxious about meet and greets or tickets to shows,
No, you didn't say anything at all obnoxious.
Yeah, but he didn't offend anybody in Iowa tonight, at least, you know.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Oh, my Lord.
All right. Well, Alan, you want to take us out?
He's going to turn his mic back on.
I had to turn my mic back on. I'm a heavy breather, so it's been pointed out to me that I sound like a pervert or something when the interviews are going on. So
Darth Vader.
I gave my mute button a workout tonight, Mike. You're welcome.
It's probably that dungeon back there that'll get you off.
It is. Actually, I've been rearranging. We're getting ready to redo our flooring and paint some walls and everything, so there's a bunch of stuff piled up back behind that sheet. And I would rather you make fun of my dildo hiding tarp or whatever than to see that pile of shit that I've got back there.
They're really dead bodies. They're dead bodies back there.
But I didn't let the bodies hit the floor. And on that note, check us out on
one good song.
Well, I kind of like Drowning Pool, but anyway, visit us on agesofrock.com. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, Stitcher Radio. And on that note, see you next week, folks. Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.